And Bill has agreed to come and share his story with us. He's celebrating a big anniversary. Congratulations. And take it away whenever you're ready.
Wow. Okay, I've been an alcoholic. Yeah, it's an anniversary, which somehow I wonder how I arrived at it. But anyway, yeah, I wandered in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous in the year of 1984. And the first meeting I went to was a God-based meeting, and I was, I didn't realize it at the time because I was early and I read this the window shades, and they were talking about God and both of them. And so I read the traditions and the steps twice, and I counted how many times it's got in there, and I almost left. I decided to stay because I came by because I wanted to find out how to stop drinking. I didn't know how to do it on my own. I tried it one more time, and it wasn't like, oh shit, I drank again. It was like it registered different. It was like I got scared for some reason. I didn't know why, and I found out years later why. Once I find out why I was drinking in the first place. Which takes a long time if you don't have a sponsor. It's just stuff happens to you eventually. But I stayed, and the first thing I did, I had drank for a couple of weeks, and I thought, that'd be a polite thing to do. So that's what I did. And they got around to asking me who I was because they never saw me before. I'm tall. I was a newcomer, and on somebody already said, they repeated the mantra, "I am an alcoholic." I did the same thing. I thought that's what you did, and I never questioned it. I just did it because that's seems like what we're supposed to do. So I told him I didn't believe in God, and I guess the race was on about saving me after that. But they helped me with the best sobriety they knew how to do. And they did it with God, and it wasn't working for me. It was always like I was looking in the window, but I was willing to learn. So I paid attention. I did some stuff. And they kept asking me, how far are you on the steps? I didn't know what the hell they're talking about because I read those things, but I didn't know what they meant. So after a bit, I was getting kind of subconscious about that thing. And I asked the guy that was in the fellowship, he'd be my sponsor. And all we did was go to men's stag meetings. That's not what I asked him for because I was struggling after I got a big book. I read the thing. And the more I read it, the more confused I got with the steps. I didn't know what they wanted because there was like you were words that didn't have any meaning to me. So the lady that had the director in her purse when I was asking about asking about Alcoholics Anonymous, she went to the Cabina Club, which at the time used to call it the 502 Club. And so I went there a few times, and there was a guy who was a circuit speaker. I heard him speak a couple of times, and he was her ex-husband's sponsor. And so I asked him if he could do it. I figured maybe between the two of us, we'd get this thing over with, and I wouldn't be asked about, where I am with the steps anymore. And so in about a year, I finally got all that done, and I didn't do the steps like you're supposed to. I did the best I could, and it was. Didn't resolve anything, but I did. I understood a little bit more what sobriety meant and what you're supposed to do, what you're supposed to start working on. So it wasn't just a waste of time, but it wasn't the right thing if you're, working the steps. And I did that in the fifth in his backyard. That was about 38 years ago. And I haven't had a sponsor since. I don't know. You tell me to do something, I ain't doing it. That's not being very cooperative. But anyway, I stayed, and then they quit asking me about it. And they were asking me, well, you got a higher power. I still don't have a higher power. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the best I can do for it. And I share a lot of stuff more now than I did in the beginning because I was, There was no mention of a plan B, like a secular meeting. Nobody said anything. There was no closet atheists there. And so why should they talk about it? So I didn't know. So I kept going to meetings, and I was just like I do now. I go to a lot of meetings then. I go to a lot of meetings now. Okay, now I'm getting sober. I'm not drinking anymore. I'm still doing the stuff I did when I used to drink at it. And it dawned on me that, I was involved in a lot of gun-related things. I belong to five different gun-related programs, and three of them are shooting programs. And I did a lot of that. And I was doing that in sobriety, and it wasn't working anymore. I used to drink on myself a lot. I mean, I was okay after that, but I wasn't getting the okay part. And so it dawned on me that I could, I've got to stop shooting. And all of a sudden, it crossed my mind, I'm not going to have to stop that. I have to get rid of all the guns and stuff. But I didn't want to do that. And that took me about a year and a half, taking that to meetings and discussing it with myself while I'm walking. And so one day, I asked the question one more time, why do I want to get rid of the guns? And I heard a voice inside me and said, it's time. And I acted on it. So the next, I was still a dealer. I still sold guns at the gun shows and that kind of stuff. And so I just started taking my collection down, and they went, the first gun show, they were gone, bang. Just, that's a lot of money. Now, I was from the program about maybe, I just guessed, maybe 5 months. And my wife says she went out of a 19-year marriage. And I thought, I asked her, is there any way of saving it? She says, no. And then she told me what the new guy and her plans were going to be. And basically, they were going to, I wouldn't have to pay child support because they're taking the kids out of country. And I wouldn't have to pay alimony because this guy's going to marry her. And his suggestion from a guy who went to college, so I can't knock people that go to college after that, just quick deed the house over to him. They're going to give me the whole thing. And I'm left with a mortgage, and so what? And I didn't know what to do with that. And the gal that gave me that directory, I told her that. And she says, holy shit, you realize you got a job, you're living in a house, and you're going to be married? The women from the 502 are going to find about that. They're going to be camping in your front yard. That scared the crap out of me because I was always afraid of girls, women. Even when I was a little kid, afraid of girls, And I didn't like guys. I had no interest in sports. So I was pretty much a lonely kid in a school full of children that tend to be interested in each other. So that bothered me. But anyway, before the year was up, before I had my first birthday in the program, the wife said the thing was going to work for her. She wasn't going to, if I wanted a divorce, I still, if I wanted it, I'd have to do the thing. And I didn't think that would be a good idea because my father had a divorce, and I remember what that amounted to. So I didn't want to do what he was doing. I didn't have nearly as much money as he had. So I just said, no, let's just stay married. And that was a long time ago. And we did that. And after I reached my first birthday, we redid the nuptials at the Ports of Call, which is in a little church, which none of this was actually real, I guess. I guess the guy was preacher or something, but anyway, so we did that. And that's also the same day that, no, my wedding anniversary and my sobriety date are the same day. It wasn't the same day as the other thing we did because that was kind of close to it. So we stayed married all these years. And I've thought about this, I sort of went back in my 40 years on this program. She stuck with me the 20 years I was drinking. She hung out with me with a year before we got married. And she tolerated all the nonsense of sobriety and all that kind of stuff and all the meetings I went to and all the crazy things I was doing while I wasn't going to meetings. She still stayed. She didn't run away. And I thought that was pretty noble for a person that was going to walk away from the marriage. Now the kids, they're senior citizens. My wife is 78 years old now. I turned 80 last year, and I'm 80 and a half now. And all this, I keep thinking back, all I came in that one winter evening back in January 1984. And that was just because I wanted to find out how to stop drinking. And because I did that, all this other stuff happens. Because that's like 40 years, a lot of stuff takes place in 40 years. And 2000, she had a heart attack. That was November the 5th. And that was an ongoing thing. And it took all day long for us to finally get to doctors that were serious about heart attacks. We walked into a regional hospital. And after 45 minutes and approaching the desk three times, and my wife's having a heart attack. Nobody listened. And so my wife says, "Let's just go home." So we did that. And before the evening was over with, it was really acting up on her. So I called the first responders. It seemed like they were there before I get down to the second floor. Adrenaline changes the concept of time. All these guys show up in the front room. I open up the double doors and they put their gurney in there. And anyway, I shut down the house and then I follow the fireman out as they were leaving. They're going to a hospital. Not the hospital she went to before. She went to the county hospital in San Bernardino, which is a much smaller hospital. So she was in there. And then she was in the emergency room. And she had that heart attack that kills 90 out of 100 people. That's what she was talking about. And then the first time I saw the doctor that was working on her, he slammed the door open and he kept repeating to himself. He said it three times, "Your wife shouldn't be alive. Like you're disappointed or something." And so she didn't die. That's 23 years ago. And at that time, I had walked away from the program because I had issues I was dealing with. We were living in the mountains. That house that we bought when I sold off all the guns and stuff, it was a weekend thing. And then that was a magical thing. All of us liked going up there. I used to take a guy from the Alano Club with me. And he would just stand on the deck and look at the trees. He was just, I don't know what his where his mind was, and I'd be going for a walk. I did a hell of a lot of walking up in the mountains. I burned up a lot of anxiety through the soles of my shoes. That's the only thing I had because I couldn't drink anything anymore, so still had problems. So anyway, we lived up there for 10 years, and I had really Mickey Mouse jobs. I guess I was learning humility, I suppose, because one. We walked away from the house that we had in Alhambra because our kid got out of jail 3 years too soon. They sentenced him to 3 years and 3 months, and when he turned 18, they let him go. And I won't get into why the court system did that for the kid, but he was dealing with the Southern Pacific Railroad, and that had a lot to do with it because they had a hard-on against the SP. We're not going to let the kids stay down here in this house anymore. So we'll decide to just move in, just pack everything up. And just like any alcoholic, you do a geographic, but we did this in sobriety. So I walked away from the family business and she stopped the practice she was working at. And then the kids and all that stuff moved up to the mountains. And the oldest kid was already out of jail. He was 18, so he didn't have to go to school. The youngest kid finished his school up there in a big parent school system. So I lived up there for those 10 years. And like I said, the 7 years I drove to the job I found in Ontario was 74 miles away. That's a lot of mountain driving. That's 80 miles a day in mountain driving. In one direction, it's 250 curves. I counted a whole bunch of times because you can't get a radio up here. You start inventing things to do. So 250 curves, Yeah, and it started me thinking why why people are losing control of their cars because the street's not straight anywhere. If you take your eyes off the street, you're running into something or off the edge of the road. And you see the special little marks they make. And after a while, you figure it out and you see the whole picture. And it's very frightening. But we lived up there and I joined the Alano Club up there. Well, it's not even a club, it was just where we met. But I was part of that thing, and I got on the board. And I never went to the hell with it, steering committee meeting. I was on it, but when I got the job off the mountain, all that mountain stuff had to stop because that job was so far away. It's 4 hours a day, taking out of your life. So I was off the road again, and the road is there's like three ways to get up there and down, and the fire road. So I used to go because I had a four-wheel drive car. I'd just go off, screwed up traffic. I'd go down the fire roads until they caught me doing it, and they started filling up all the fire roads with dump loads of dirt, so I couldn't get over that thing. So I had to get in line like everybody else. But it was a magical time. That was a good thing that we did. And it was a good thing that I walked away from the thing that took me away from the family. You know, the drinking, that was a take me away from the family thing too. I spent most of my time at home. I did most of my drinking by myself, but it was mostly done inside the garage. That's where I had a little machine shop, and I laid out leaded glass windows. I did all kinds of crazy stuff in there. But I wasn't working a marriage. So I think back about it, everything changed after I got sober. You started doing adult stuff. Like I told you, I got rid of the guns and things. And I walked away from the family business. These are things that that sobriety allowed me to do that I couldn't do when I was drinking. And the old man was pissed off because he was on his way up to Oregon to buy more apartment buildings. So I walked away from the family business. I was spending quality time with my dad, pulling chips on his machine when I was 8 years old. And when I left that place when I was 43, I think. And I never went back as an employee. I'd go back once in a while to visit him, but my old man remarried and he had another family, and he was gone. And both my sisters and myself realized that when we were little kids, they threw us under the bus because they didn't have a real marriage. They fought and carried on like crazy. But nobody drank in that family. I often wonder if they drank would have been better. I don't know. But they didn't. And my mother wound up, over years of this mental abuse, she wound up having a nervous breakdown. And then the three kids, we all developed problems of our own. My sister is 5 years younger than me. She had her first kid at 15, and the second was at 16. I don't even know about sex that yet. You know, she was 5 years younger than me. I was such a retarded person. That's the thing that kind of bothers me. You know, they sent me to school, and I was struggling with learning, and nobody sat down to figure out what was wrong with little kid, Billy. And they just kept, their solution was to hold me back a half a semester in grammar school, and they did it again in junior high. So it took me 13 years to get out of high school that I absolutely got nothing out of. 13 years of watching a stupid clock go around. So that's the reason, I say, I drank because I was incredibly boring. I made it okay to be boring. And that's why I think about now, if they gave me hydrocodone when I had a cracked tooth. I realized that the reason I drank was because of the ease and comfort. And I got that from those stupid pills. I never got addicted to them. I never took them any longer than I was supposed to. But I'm afraid of stuff that will allow you to have ease and comfort. If there's a trigger, that's got to be it for me. I don't drink anything that looks like beer. Even though it has alcohol in it or not, I just don't do it. It doesn't appeal to me, so I don't go there. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sure dragging around about saying nothing. I finished my career down there at Alger Manufacturing. I was a machinist. They gave me an entire department for myself. I was just a card employee. I wasn't a supervisor or nothing. But yet they asked me about some of the people I worked with because I worked with a lot of the temporary pools people, and I gave them 10 different names, and I hired all 10 of them. And as far as I know, they stayed there until I was gone. The two girls I had hired in a sense, I worked with those for quite a while, and we run a really really good department. And I didn't know how good it was until they put the computer terminals in all of our departments. They wanted to know what we're doing with our time. And I spent most of my time sitting on my ass watching somebody else work. Because I've got a layout, I'd have like a panic attack. And I'd have to take those things and break it down to every small little piece that I could. And then I was so careful in what I was doing, if there was some mistakes, they were worked out before I actually turned the machine on. And machines ran. Yeah, my girls are smart enough. They started to learn how to check their parts, so we didn't make any bad parts. But I found out when they started tabulating the information that we're giving them in our computers they gave us. They were trying to get the entire company to come up to 60% efficiency. Then my department and one across the street, which did the same thing, but they were using numerically controlled machines. And I was using machines that were made in the 60s. We were running 80% efficiency, and we didn't make any bad parts because my girls were so sharp, they knew when something was not right. They'd act on it. That did that for 20 years. And I don't know. I left the company because, I referred to the company was taking advantage of us. And I always put that down as safe sex. And I got tired of it. And I left them 26 years to 19 days later. And I thought about that. Did I miss it? I don't know. I had a hell of resentment. But then I'd stopped going to meetings because I'd stopped when I was living in Big Bear. For 22 years, I didn't go to meetings. And the only reason I came back to it is because I got suicidal after I moved here to Las Vegas. We had all kinds of stuff happening. I almost died. She almost died. And that didn't do it. It was just like all of a sudden I was in a different town. I had no friends. I was living in the front room of my son's house. Against two people that were hostile against us. Anyway, for some reason that turned into depression. And I was really entertaining suicide because I was sort of a half-ass engineer. I'm not trained for it, but all the stuff I did, you just learn how to do that kind of stuff and you start thinking that way. So I researched my problem. I made it to where it was flawless, and I'll do it tomorrow. I'm not going to kill myself today. I'll do something before, So I kept pushing off the thing, and I finally got myself on the other side of it. But I didn't want to think like that anymore. So I found out that our insurance company does pay for a psychiatric help. So I made some phone calls, and I got past the gatekeeper, and they gave me a psychiatrist, and I started going to him. My sessions were $30, 45 minutes. And I got to the AA part of my story, which took a couple, maybe 3 months. And he wanted to know why I didn't go back to meetings. And I told him I didn't have a real, I don't know, embarrassment. And he says, "Well, you just moved here. They don't know where you came from. They don't know anything about you. Just go to meetings." So I took a suggestion and I did that. And it was the same meetings I'd walked away from. I didn't expect it to be any different. So I wasn't surprised. But there was like they do cakes on the last Thursday of the month. And I don't know if that was a Wednesday or a Thursday, but it was my 8th birthday. And I was there on Thursday and they were giving out two cakes. And I thought about that. And I didn't tell them about my sobriety because I gotta tell them the stupid story I got between my ears. So I went there for about a year, maybe a year and a half, whatever it was. Somebody mentioned they went to a secular meeting, and I found out where it was, and that's why I went to my first secular meeting. I was sober enough, but not working a program for 33 years at that point. Now, I also found out that there was five people in that Alana Club, which they called the 51 Club. They went out. They had 3 decades each, various lengths. And two of the people, actually, I talked to them. And one guy went out after I went to the club. And I don't know why, but they both did it on pills. I don't know about the other three people. I don't know if I ever met them. I just don't know. But that enforced me to the fact that, okay, yeah, I got 30 years of sobriety. That doesn't make me any more likely to die sober as anybody else that doesn't die sober. I'm not bulletproof. And I'm not working any kind of a program. So I stayed there for a while, and I was learning the program all over again through them, listening to the people, learning the people's names. And so my 40th birthday came up one day at a time. Pretty soon, it's like 7 years later. I went back to a meeting about maybe 3, 4 weeks ago to that meeting. I recognized probably 5 or 6 people in there. They didn't recognize me. At least they didn't act like they knew me. And we're elbow to elbow. There's about 40 people in there. Nobody's wearing a mask. And the reason I want to go back, I want to tell them my story because it's important to me. I thought it might be interesting to them. And I still got a chance to do that, I guess. Maybe I could do it sometime in the afternoon. I don't know. That's still up for a decision. But I kept thinking about all the stuff that's happened in sobriety and all the things the things that we did. I've never been on airplanes, so I've never really been on a vacation. Because all I ever did was work. That's all I knew how to do. So I don't know how to really enjoy life. I've never been to a concert. I've never been to any kind of a. I haven't been anywhere. The only thing I had was the thing I used to do with. I did it with rifles. And I didn't do that anymore. And I haven't fired a gun, except one time. In 40 years, pretty much. And I don't know. For something that was so important to me, it just all of a sudden it was just not important. It's like as if I had a moment of clarity or something. And I've never been back to it. And I was slightly older than the rest of the people that I used to shoot with. And I think there's only one left that's still alive. And I'm not talking to him, although I have his phone number. But, oh gosh. I probably got closer to being on the program here in Las Vegas and because of Zoom than I ever was before. I used to go to a lot of different clubhouses. I spent a lot of time in the middle of the night, stuff I never did when I was drinking. Now I do it in sobriety. And because of the stupid hours I had at where I worked, I was there at 4 o'clock in the morning every morning for 20 years. And I started thinking, I've done about all the amends I could do, the people that I knew. I remember the big one was, told the old man the shit that I stole from the family business. And that was kind of embarrassing for both of us. And I thought back about years after that. Basically, I cleaned up my side of the street, and he didn't do anything. He felt embarrassed. That's about all I felt out of it. So, why is that important? I found out. Quite back then, my father said something to me in my first year of sobriety. I don't know how long I was sober. He says, "Billy, I'm glad you stopped drinking." He didn't refer. He didn't. So that was the end of the conversation. And I found out after he died, and he's been dead 23 years now, that his brother died from alcoholism in 1981, but I don't know the month or the date. And I got sober in 84. So it was like a 3 year window. And he kept this knowledge to the grave. He never talked about it ever again. My mother never said anything about it, never commented about my sobriety. So I don't know. These people grew up and they survived the depression. Maybe that's the way they are. I don't know. What makes it sad, I was born before the baby boomers. So I'm not even part of that group. I just literally. I'm kind of a classless kind of a person that still exists somehow. Okay, so now I had that birthday. I counted days off at a time for about 4 months. And I thought, when I finally finish with this thing, I'm never going to talk about it again until it's maybe I might say something the next one. But I turned 80 last year. That was different. I've had lots of birthdays, but 80 is like a different birthday. I can't explain it. A lot of people die in their 80s. Is that what it's about? Life's finally getting real. I don't know. But I talked myself in, okay, and now okay, I got 40 years. I'm going to try for 50. And that's where I left it because I got tired of driving myself crazy thinking about my mortality. And somehow that makes a difference. So, in 10 years, we'll have this conversation again, I guess. Yeah, I keep thinking. I don't know where I had been. I don't know, if I'd stayed with the company. My father died 23 years ago. He had a stroke. And my sisters and myself, we decided to give the company to our stepmom because she wanted it, because she got everything else. And so we did. And she can't get rid of the buildings because of environmental issues that she didn't seem to understand. And we didn't include her into it. And I have a friend that still lives in the area, and I was talking to him about a month ago, and he says they finally put a for sale sign on the buildings. Don't know. I think that was a good idea walking away from that place. But if I hadn't walked away from the shop when I did, I'd be still down there in East Los Angeles. And I couldn't think of a worst possible outcome for a person's life. So that got me free from that. I got free from alcohol. I got a whole bunch of stuff I got away with when I stopped drinking. Because it allowed me to do stuff. Sure, we did a lot of stuff, as adults. We got crazy. We had a whole bunch of Mercedes-Benzes we had for a while, until we decided, they're so high profile, it's maybe not to be a good idea to drive those things through the city of San Bernardino because somebody's allowed to follow us home. So we don't do that anymore. But just the two of us, we've had this little tiny business I call marriage. And we've done a lot of stuff with it. We tolerated the kids, all the crazy stuff they had. And I just can't get past it. Sobriety equals one life. And we got two of them out of it. My wife's still hanging around with me, which is absolutely, if there's any miracles, that's got to be one of them. I struggle for words to describe what's happened. And we haven't done anything spectacular. We came and bought, we paid cash for this house because my father talked me into buying a mutual fund in my senior year in high school. And that was a down payment for our first house. And we pyramided that thing to where we're living now in an upscale neighborhood. Yeah, well, we got to be the poorest people on a whole damn thing. But whatever it is, people talk to us, and we keep the yard up, and we keep the flowers going. And we water our rocks because we don't have grass. So it's just we do adult stuff. And I didn't do, I was I thought I was doing this stuff. I was drinking like an adult, I guess. But geez, it's just like I'm running out of things to talk about. And our kid that I couldn't keep out of jail, the one that the reason we moved for, he's now a grandfather. We satisfied some of the records of his past. He had an outstanding warrant for arrest, felony arrest for him. It was on the books for 33 years. We went to California and we straightened all that out, and he went to jail for 2 months. Now that's over with, so he doesn't have to worry about carrying a gun going to California like he does. I don't know. That's funny. I got rid of the guns. I didn't buy any more. I was finished with those things. I remember I used to have guns. I have all kinds of that stuff. And guns used to take me places I shouldn't go. I wouldn't have gone if I didn't have a gun. I guess. I don't know, maybe you can draw some common sense in this. Anyway, I'm just rattling on, and pretty soon I got to wake you guys all up. So I guess that's it, I suppose. I've learned to try to share. I don't know a lot of words. My vocabulary was never developed very well. And it takes me a long time to describe something because I don't know how else to do it. So anyway, here I am, sober. And I'm not the guy you got to worry about on the freeway anymore. So thanks for listening to me.